It was worry time in South Philly. The Grande Barber would turn into full-blown panic.
Bucks, 3:27 to go. McCann dropping. That's intercepted. And the 10 to the 20.
He's gone.
Going coast to coast. Grande Barber to the 50, to the 40. Barber to the 30. Nobody's going to touch him. Grande Barber, 10-5. Touchdown, Tampa Bay.
Barber had shown blitz once again, but instead of rushing McNabb, he peeled back into coverage, putting himself in prime position for the interception.
There you go, ladies and gentlemen. A little bit of a look back into the past. We're going to switch over to some video here. Hopefully we'll make this stuff work. You never know. We got a totally new setup tonight. We got the new computer rocking. Welcome to What the Buck. We do not have our bumper music on this machine, which is exactly why we played the throwback to the Philadelphia Eagles touchdown by Grande Barber. I didn't feel like going and trying to figure out to get the music back on. Hopefully everyone can hear me out there. It looks like everything's good on our side, which means that I suspect everything is probably good on your side as well. This is What the Buck. We are broadcasting live from lovely Studio 76 in Valrico, Florida. I am Derek Old School Fournier, your host. I know I have to remind you because it's been so goddamn long since I've been on. And yes, as Buck for Life has mentioned, I did in fact find the Fat Man jersey in the new colors, which I am representing tonight on the podcast. They do not, however, make the Fat Man jersey in the white jersey right now. Apparently, they don't make white fabric big enough to cover my fat ass, which I find very hard to believe. But who knows? Maybe they'll get one of those out there, and when they do, I will, of course, leap onto that in so much as I ever leap anywhere and get a white jersey. But I will say this. My son, Nicholas, who you guys have heard me speak of before, I asked him if he had seen Dad's new jersey, and he said no. When I showed it to him, he said, hey, that's really sharp, because my 8-year-old says things like, hey, that's really sharp. Anyway, tonight we've got a lot of things to talk about. There's been a lot of time passed since last we spoke. We took the draft show that we did over at our sponsor bar, Wing House, over in Tampa. Thanks to everyone who was able to come out for that show. We had a great time over there with our friends. It was a good time to get back together. In fact, that carried over. fucking Kurt. A fat man may ruin it, white one with gravy stains. Gravy is delicious. Don't get it twisted. I love some gravy, but I do manage to keep white shirts clean for the most part. But that is a certainly an astute observation, Kurt. At any rate, it was great for us to get together over at Wing House. We had Steve and Corey with us on the broadcast. Kurt did a great job of cutting that up into sort of manageable bites that you guys were able to download, which was outstanding. As Spent just mentioned in the chat room, between that day and all the work around that, we generated over 1,000 pounds of peanut butter for DoSomething.org and Feeding America, which was just outstanding. Thank you to everyone who participated in that. We're going to be doing a lot of drives like that this year. As you guys know, some of the rules and stipulations around some of the raffle models that we had used in the past have changed. And so we also kind of reflected on what the spirit and intent of what we were doing was. And it's great to get money to these charities. That's terrific. But a lot of these charities need stuff. And to be honest, if you do stuff, then there's no question about where the hell anything's going. So we definitely will be doing a lot more drives like that, and Spent will be putting that stuff together, I'm sure, and communicating that stuff out there. To GJ Podbash in the chat room, gravy on everything. Not everything. I'm not a big fan of gravy on hot dogs, but other than that, gravy's pretty damn good. At any rate, welcome again to the show tonight. We are fortunate in that Mark Cook will be joining us at about 9:20 from PewterReport.com. The Ginger Badass will be showing up, and we'll talk about OTAs. You know, we've got to get an insider who's got access to that stuff in order to get the information from OTAs. When we get to training camp, hopefully everything will go well and we'll be credentialed. And we'll get plenty of insight for you guys and cover it the way we normally cover it. That's not to say that we're better. I just think that we are. But you get a lot of perspective. We obviously give you a lot of video and a lot of stills in so much as the NFL will allow us to do. A couple of sort of house cleaning notes. I don't know why it feels so cramped. This is exactly the same workspace that I have always had, and everything just feels fucking in the way. I think it's because we had such a nice setup. Kurt did such a nice job getting us set up at Wing House that now it feels completely thrown thrown asunder. Anyway, we do need to lock down our sponsors. I'm finishing up our new sponsorship packages. Winghouse has given me a verbal commitment that they're going to be our sponsor bar yet again, much to Kurt's chagrin, because it will be the Winghouse over on Tampa on Hillsborough Ave. The jersey is tighter. No, it's not. It seems true to size. The only jerseys that are actually appreciably larger are the actual old school jerseys. That replica jersey is gigantic. This seems to run true to size. Now maybe the real ones that the players actually leverage are tighter, but this jersey to me, for Shadowhawks' benefit, does seem to run true to size. So if you're a 2X, it's going to be a 2X. Ain't nothing special about it. At any rate, we will be locking down those sponsors. If you guys have people that you know who may be interested, I know that Bucko Pat and a couple of you guys have asked me about it. Those sponsorship packages should be ready next week. They're pretty straightforward. There's nothing fancy or amazing about it. We'll get those things over to them, and we'll get those guys locked down. But I was very happy to speak with the Winghouse folks and get sort of that verbal commitment that they're going to be on board, which is tremendous. We'll have a home again, which is nice. The target for that sponsor package is by the end of next week, hopefully before that. I do want to send a couple of congratulations. One to Big Swole. If you don't know who Big Swole is, you haven't come to our tailgates. So Big Swole graduated. He graduated from college. He also has a truck, which is outstanding. And he allegedly has a girlfriend. I really don't have any proof that that's true. It may be inconvenient because we definitely want to make him our bitch the next season and for the future. So, Richard, I see you're in the chat room. Could you please make sure that he knows that, girlfriend or not, we definitely need his assistance. And that will actually make him more attractive to her, I believe. He said, not seriously. So, Kurt is going to make sure that I mention that the graduation party that Big Swell had was at a wing house that had air conditioning here in lovely Brandon, actually managed by our friend Aaron. So, and his girlfriend was there, but we didn't get introduced. I'm telling you, I'm going to hold out belief. But anyway, congratulations to you. Congratulations to Steve White. Now, this is sort of a bittersweet thing. You guys may or may not know this. There's not like there's ballyhoo about this, but Steve White is now a defensive intern for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. He's working with the defensive line, I believe specifically, but I don't know that to be sure. That's great. As a fan of the team, that makes me happy. I am definitely excited for him to work with these guys and help improve them based on what I know Steve knows about this game. I'm excited for my friend Steve and that's the direction he wanted to go. It gave him a great opportunity. It is bittersweet only in so much as that means that Steve White will not be joining us on the broadcast for as long as he's an intern or working with the Buccaneers, because those guys are precluded from doing those sorts of interviews. Now, I will work with him to see if there's any way we can get interviews that are officially sanctioned, but I'm going to go ahead and say that that is probably an outside chance. So we will work hard to find another sort of tactician that has a similar capability to Steve, but we wish our friend well as he goes on and does great things with the Buccaneers and wherever he goes from there past his internship, to be honest, if they don't lock him down. So big shout out to Steve White, SGW94 on Twitter. If you want to tell him congratulations, go ahead and hit him up on Twitter and let him know that you wish him the best over there, and we will certainly miss him. So, okay, that's my last announcement, I think. Quick hits with regards to news. The Bucks put out a note that they are opening an office in Sarasota, which is intriguing. I had a friend who had tried to work with them from a consulting perspective to talk about expanding their fan base down into the South Florida area and really discussed opening offices down there, and they sort of poo-pooed that back in the Jason Dial days. But now they've opened it, and our man, Buckhead, is absolutely already on the job and getting over there, which is tremendous. So that looks like some good growth down there. I did see the announcement that the Green Bay Packers game is already sold out, which is no surprise. Packers fans always come out. There's a report in the chat room. This will not be news by the time you download the podcast, that Don Zimmer has passed away. So that's obviously sad for fans of the game of baseball, regardless of whether they're fans of the Rays or not. I am not intimately familiar with it because I don't particularly care for the game, but I certainly care for the game enough to know who he is. So obviously condolences out to his family and friends and the fans who will be impacted by that. By what I have seen, I went back and watched some of the videos. We'll transition a little bit into the actual Bucks information. I want to remind you guys how you can interact with the show. We got the folks over in the chat room. Welcome to the chat room. I'm always excited when we do a show after a long hiatus, because part of me is always afraid that if we take a long hiatus, we come back into the chat room and people will be like, they'll be gone. Be like, ah, fuck it. The show doesn't exist anymore. But we come back and we have a nice little chat room over there, healthy interaction. The Twitter sphere, you know, gets moving as well, and we start getting things rocking. My final sort of announcement before we start talking a little bit about Bucks stuff specifically, and before we get Mark Cook on the Skype line, which we're, you know, praying to all of the appropriate deities works, because I have tested this, but this is a new laptop and a new configuration, so you may have to bear with us on that. My man Patches, one of the writers we have for What the Buck, I see he's over in the chat room, which is awesome. You guys know that we have Patches, we have Brian Dory that are writing some articles. We had a bit of a snafu. My editor, at Filthy Nerdy, got sick and was not able to edit his article in a timely enough fashion for the media cycle that exists now because of the immediacy of news. So his draft article just got published. I think this morning I approved the publish. He did the editing. But that notwithstanding, an excellent article by Patches. If you haven't seen it, get over to whatthebuck.net. Take a look at that article. Chat it up. Let him know what you think. Patches over here, he's obviously able to answer any questions you had about it. There weren't a lot of deep dives into it because it was his review of the draft. He submitted it well in advance of when it was published. But I know that he has had time now to review what's been going on. I'm sure he has opinions about that as well. And depending on how long we go with Mark Cook, maybe Patches may even, who do you think we're going to pick, smartass? Shadowhawk, I always got some shit to say over there, man. I'll tell you what. Hey, that's another an opportunity for me to give you a reminder. First, out to Making Merkins and anyone who's got music capabilities, we need new music. If you guys are wannabe DJs, E2, if you listen to the show anymore, you son of a bitch, you keep losing weight and playing basketball, but I don't know if you play, if you watch the Buccaneers anymore or if you watch the podcast or any of that stuff, we need bumper music. We need it badly. All of the quotes are out of date. They're talking about guys that don't play for the team anymore. So anyone who can put together some cool bumper music, the last ones by Making Merkins were awesome. We would love to have them. So please do. If you have those skills, drop me a note at oldschool@whatthebuck.net, and we'll see if we can bribe you with some sort of swag or something to put something together. So, at any rate, running back by committee was the thing that kind of hit me. When we drafted Sims, and we had all of the running backs already, even with the injuries, I was one of those guys who was very excited about Doug Martin. I like what I see out of Doug Martin. I think he is a complete back. I don't understand how quickly people write off individual skills. I know that Tedford likes to use backs, or did. I don't have a fucking clue what he plans to do with the Bucks at this point. I don't know that anyone does, though. His quotes were actually very interesting, I thought, on Buccaneers.com. He made a comment that there's nothing new in football, which is actually true. We've said it for years now. It's blocking and tackling. Some people would argue, but spread option, not new. What Chip Kelly does, not particularly new. They're variations on a theme. They're putting the same sort of puzzle pieces together in a different configuration. I actually think the most innovative piece is what Chip is doing up in Philadelphia. It's just going to be interesting to see if he can maintain it because of the pace that it requires. But from a schematic perspective, what he does with distance between players and points is very, very interesting and strategically very different than what anyone else is doing in the league. Now, whether what Tedford is going to do will look like that or not, I don't know. We won't even know probably through training camp. Hell, I don't know what we'll see in preseason. I don't know that they want to play too much of that too close to the chest because they've got to practice the shit against live fire. They've got to get the reps. Now, I went out and read Eric Delarada's article on OTAs, ObuteReport.com, and a number of the other articles. It looked like the quarterbacks got a little rustier than they were the first iteration when Mark Steve and I were talking about this in the past. But as they continue to work through this with guys who will probably not be on the team, it's tough to gauge what kind of progress they're making. That's one of the things that I'm going to be drilling Mark about in a friendly way, obviously. Who's out there? What can our fans actually expect with regards to gauging progress? Now, if you go out there and listen to the Hardy Nickerson interview, he's glowing, which is great. But Hardy's an upbeat guy, which is terrific. You want that kind of upbeat nature. But at the same time, we need to get some sort of a gauge for how things are going. And I normally wait for training camp. It's funny. We've already got people that are – who was it? I think it was USA Today predicted the Bucks to go 3-13. This is something about the new media that just pisses me off. And there's a lot of things about it that piss me off, which is ironic given the fact that we leveraged the shit out of the new media. And, in fact, when we started, that was the thing that gave us our competitive advantage was the fact that we took advantage of the new media. But because it's a 24-hour news cycle, everything counts as news. And I just don't get it. Some jagoff in New York says the Bucks are going to go 3-13, having not seen a single fucking down in training camp, probably not even in OTAs. How do you even make that assertion? I get it. The math, it got to equal 16, and no one's going to predict a tie. But Jesus Christ, How does any of this make sense? And all due respect to Patches in the chat room and to GJ Podbash, you're just picking random fucking numbers, guys. We have no fucking clue what this team will look like. One injury destroys your predictions. I have never understood the fixation people have with that. I know, and you know, Bucks Brief just said what he did. He went through there and looked at it, and this is what people typically do. And when I did morning stuff here in Tampa, it was the same thing. Well, you look through, well, how were they last year? How much do you think they're going to grow, right? It doesn't fucking matter. So it's intellectually challenging to me that people give a shit about it. And even more so when they get worked up about it. I mean, they're like, there's no way we're going to go 3-13. How could you possibly think that we will regress with a new coach? Dude, just fucking relax. It's some jagoff who doesn't know anything about the team picking a number. Now, to you fans out there, you local fans, I've said this before. We've got some new people in the chat room. We've got some folks who have not been able to do this in the past. And I can't say this strongly enough. Plan a vacation around training camp. All you have to do is plan your vacation around training camp. You will see more. You will learn more. You will get closer than at any point in the year. It will absolutely be the best decision you make if you're a Bucks fan and can do that. For you people in the chat room who are new, who don't know how to use the ad block piece, I'm sure if you ask one of your friends, they will be able to do that. They'll tell you how to do it. I don't know, but I know that Shuck and a lot of you guys will get a chance to meet. If you do plan on coming to training camp, and we're starting to plan things now, I know that Spent and I have planned the trip to Canton for the Pro Football Ultimate Fans Association induction, as well as the you know, our induction here in the Hall of Fame. It's going to be a great weekend. That kind of screws me over because I lose some of training camp, but it's the right thing to do. But for the folks who do make it over for training camp, when we're there, we would absolutely love to get together. I think we got together at every session. I think we end up getting together and have lunch with a group of people. So if you guys are down to do that, let us know. We can use the What the Buck Facebook page or the What the Buck Chatters Facebook page to coordinate that. It's always a good time. We get a chance to go look at the team and then go chat about it and have a couple beers. And to me, it's one of the best parts of the year. And you still have all of the excitement because nothing has been ruined or screwed over yet, right? I mean, the reality situation is funny. My son is trying to become a skateboarder. God love him. I never had that capability. Skateboarding, from what I can tell, is a sport of who falls down the least, right? When you look at the people who are good at it, there's going to be a lot of falls. You're going to get really fucked up. In football, the same thing sort of happens. It just doesn't happen quite as often. So when you have that dream, I remember the commercial from a couple years ago where they would talk about it's time for next year. There's always next year. Everyone around the water cooler. So that's the thing about training camp, is you get to do that and you get to talk about those things. So we'll see how it goes. I'm looking very forward to it, and hopefully you guys are too. With regards to other events, I know we're going to start planning some events coming up here from a charity perspective, but we'll let you guys know about that through the website. Patches will continue to write, I believe, and you guys will be able to follow us there. Additionally, when we start working on these broadcasts, I'd really like to get things a little bit more interactive with you guys. Now, sometimes we're fortunate we have Mark or one of those guys call in. But we'd love to hear from you guys, too, because I hear from you guys outside or out of band. Guys like Skip Brown and Kurt, you guys have great perspectives. I don't always agree with, but that's fine. I don't give a shit. I mean, I love having the dialogue and the debate. I want you guys to feel much more comfortable calling in this season, because I think that as you guys get more involved, more people will feel comfortable enough to get involved. So when I said it's not a circle jerk, Shadowhawk, why do you make it dark all the time, you son of a bitch? The running back by committee thing that I started going into and then went into a diatribe, I like Doug Martin. I have nothing against Sims. I have nothing against any of the other backs. I am not a guy who likes seeing a bunch of backs going in and shuttling in and out. I think it's hard for a back to get his pace. That could be because I'm old, right? I mean, totally own up to the fact that this could be completely unsubstantiated bullshit. But I like having your bell cow back. I like being able to spell him. You got to have a backup, and you never know with injuries what's going to happen. But I don't like the idea of shuttling backs in and out. That bothers me. I've got to wait and see what Tedford's offense does with this. Because if he's going to be doing that because of the tempo with which he runs, then I can't really argue too much with it. I certainly have heard good things about what Sims is doing in practice. There was a comment about them adjusting his pad level, which was apparently a knock on him from college, running with his pad level too high. that's great. The education that these coaches are going to impart, that's one of the things that I love to see when I get a chance to go to training camp. And one of the things I'll talk to Mark Cook about as well is how are the coaches imparting knowledge to the players? One of the things that you'll hear a lot of coaches say is when it comes from a coaching, there's more coaching done the younger the player. And this should be immediately obvious. By the time a player gets to the NFL, it is assumed that they kind of know what the fuck they're doing. So there's not as much coaching. That being said, there is no guarantee that they do. Now, Bucks Brief over in the chat room, and I mentioned this before, and Bucks Brief, feel free to pimp your podcast. I went out and listened to a couple of sessions, I think it was a week and a half ago. Bucks Brief has his own podcast. They do a really nice job. I think his co-host is in here too. But really, really nice job over there with their podcast. And he's been in our chat room a number of times and participated really well. So his comment is a lot of Doug and Sims on the field together. Now, that's always been a dream to have two targets, right? One of the problems with a fullback is typically fullbacks are like another lineman. They're used sparingly. That's one of the things that should have been such an advantage for Mike Allstott, is when you had Mike Allstott on the field with whoever, work done, he should have been able to do what the fullback does, which is block or lead block, and he was a threat because he was essentially a tailback in a fullback body. The problem was Mike never got particularly good at blocking, either because he didn't want to or couldn't, any of a number of issues. Lorenzo Neal, on the other hand, was a fullback. All he did was clear holes and let people run for 1,000 yards. That's all that man did. Now, we had this dream of a rocket backfield a couple times, and actually it was called something else. I heard Allstott talking on Bubba's show the other day, and he had a different name for it. It was Lorenzo Neal on NFL Network. But the idea of having two tailbacks back there, so, yeah, they can chip, because really that's all you need. You need a back to be able to chip and then get back out into a route. Rhino was the two big guys. That was one of the two. And I know the fans called it WD-40, but that wasn't the one I'm talking about. And I called it Rocket, but that was with Gruden. But regardless, or irregardless, in deference to the Reverend Jesse Jackson, if you put two backs in there, what you're telling me is that your offensive line can block. And sadly, our offensive line has not been able to do that, despite the fact that we've invested a ton of money and time in them. So when you think about it, your count, you've got to make sure that you can give... Oh, shit. Send Martin deep. There's nothing wrong with sending a running back deep. Bucks Brief, that's the two big guys. Yeah, Mike and Lorenzo Neal. It was repurposed for any dual big backs. It's when you went goal line typically with two big backs. Hey, Irregardless. I like Irregardless 55. That's a good name. That's got to be Calico Jack. I know, Shadowhawk. My point is there are a lot of fans who actually said that after the Martin injury. What's he doing running that route? It's a fucking route. He's a football player. If they call a wheel, he runs a wheel. When you have a back who's good out of the backfield, that should be a mismatch anyway. Now, he's short, which makes it a little bit more challenging. It's one of the things that's really intriguing about Sims. But when you have a guy who's that athletic, if you get him in space, you get a win. Right? One of the things you'll do with backs sometimes is you'll have them run a read route where you have them dump through the middle. And they'll just make a read on the mic. And if the mic makes a move to the outside, he's going to cut inside. And the quarterback is going through his progressions. He's going to come back down because he knows he has that mismatch that he can take advantage of. So that becomes the interesting chess game. But in order to do any of this, and the reason I brought this up and the reason I'm sort of perseverating on it is the entire thing is a house of cards if your offensive line cannot block. Now, that's not to say that I think our offensive line can't block. It's to say I have no clue what our offensive line can do right now. It's gotten more athletic, it looks, which is good. But we're going to have to be able to give our quarterback time. Now, will any team that we face have enough corner power to press? We got Mark Cook calling in. Is this the ginger badass? Oh, my Lord. It's good to have you. I want to adjust your audio settings real quick. Because it sounds like you're talking on a tin can. Give me another. Give me something sexy.
Hello, Derek. How are you?
Oh, and then he made quieter, too. Okay. Oh, welcome.
How about that? Is that good?
That's much better. I think it's just fine. If it sucks, Spent will yell at me, and we'll adjust it. At any rate, welcome to the show. We have on the air Mark Cook. I'm going to do something fancy here with the screen. I got your picture up here. You look so handsome.
Thank goodness you don't have an actual live shot of me right now. That would not be good.
Oh, my God. That's just disturbing. I hope there's no honey involved. That's all I have to say.
Well, there's a little bear sitting beside me. It's all squeezed out.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Okay, so
come on over.
That is just nothing but trouble. Anyway, before we send all of our viewers and listeners away, Mark, you have been spending a tremendous amount of time out at One Buck Place, I will assume. Is that fair to say, sir?
Well, every time we're allowed there, I'm there, yes. That would be fair. Real quick, I'm sure most people, and it's probably in the chat room right now, but I got caught up a little bit with the Don Zimmer passing this evening, watching the Rays game tonight. Why I'm watching the Rays game to torture myself, I don't know, but certainly condolences. I understand it's baseball, not football, but Don Zimmer was a legend that even football fans who don't care about baseball can have a lot of respect for. A great man, and obviously condolences to his family and the Rays organization tonight.
Absolutely, and we did, in fact, mention that a little earlier, but yeah, that's obviously going to impact everybody. So no, totally understand you getting caught up in that, Mark. But aside from that, and not at all related, so as a transition, it's what a hack who does a podcast would use instead of a true journalist like yourself.
Sure.
At OTAs, you've had a chance to see some of the things that only that fans can only dream of, right? So,
Let me just start by saying that it's not as great a dream as they might think it is. It is in jerseys and shorts. I mean, there's not any hitting going on. So, you know, I think fans confuse mini camps and OTAs with training camp. It's completely different. It's a lot of watching guys stand around. In fact, Vincent Jackson was playing cornerback yesterday. You know, they were offensive guys were simulating defense when they were doing walkthroughs. So it's not quite training camp, but yes, there are some things that fans would probably love to see, no doubt about it. But just to let them know, it's fun, but it's not training camp fun. In other words,
well, and I understand that, and that's good clarification. We actually were able to get your volume up too, which is great. Thanks, Kurt, for the save.
All right.
But right now it is the best we can do, and it's funny because one of the things that that I always find interesting is, and I don't know because I don't get to go to OTA. So, Mark, you're going to have to educate me here, which, you know, you probably do more often than you care to. How different are OTAs than training camp days when they're not in pads?
Well, I don't necessarily, you know, a lot of people have been saying, what's wrong with defensive end Michael Johnson? Why is he not out there during 11-on-11 drills and things like that? And you know, and you got Barron and Golson sitting on the sideline. You know, watching things and no Carl Nix and things. It's, you know, the intensity isn't exactly the same, but and it's more of a teaching period. When you get into training camp, now you're doing repetitions. Right now it's just a ton of install. They're in the meeting rooms during the day. They go to the practice field. They're back in meeting rooms, and they're just trying to grasp this. This is the first 9 weeks of a college semester, in other words, or whatever you want to call it. I mean, it isn't the meat and potatoes time yet. So, you know, the intensity is a little bit different. There's some confusion that goes on. There's a lot of stopping and coordinators and position coaches walking guys through certain things. But the format itself, just to give people just kind of a scoop of what happens, they let us in at 10:30 the last few days, or the last few times we had an opportunity. They let us out at 10:30. You've been out there for training camp. The first 10 or 15 minutes is a warm-up and a stretch period. Then they usually break off, and they do some of the individual drills that you'll see in training camp. Defensive backs doing the back pedal drills, you know, along with the safeties. Linebackers, you know, doing side-to-side, lateral motion-type drills. Offensive linemen spend all of their time on the far east field back behind the shed, which we're actually allowed to go watch this year, which I'll bring that up in just a minute, the difference between this year's access and years past. But the, you know, the receivers are practicing getting off of the line and getting out of the jam and different things like that. So some of that is similar. And in different days, they do different things. Like, for instance, yesterday, then they went more into a walkthrough period, which was pretty boring. Then they go into the special teams. That's when everybody at training camp gets up and goes and gets a soda and finds their buddies, you know what I mean? Because you can only watch Connor Barth kick 15 field goals in a row so many times, or Eric Page bobble a punt every once in a while so many times. It's pretty tedious. But then, you know, the fun part to me, I do like it when they do the one-on-ones with receivers and defensive backs. They've also done some where they had the quarterbacks working with the tight ends and the fullbacks going against linebackers, and that's kind of a neat thing to see too, which tells me that Tedford wants to kind of utilize every weapon on the field, even fullbacks, you know, getting looks. Now, again, this team may not even have a fullback when the 53-man roster is announced, but everybody's getting an opportunity right now. So there's a, you know, that's what I like to see, the one-on-one. But just like in training camp, what everybody likes is the 7-on-7 and then the 11-on-11 drills. And that's where we've seen a lot of the excitement and a lot of this praise that we've thrown at McCown and Glennon are coming from some of the things we've seen offensively that we just haven't seen before in the past. And as Jeff Tedford pointed out yesterday, and something that we've noted in our practice reports that we do every opportunity that we're available, have media access, is the completion percentage, the balls not hitting the ground. Yesterday was probably the sloppiest of all the days going back to the first voluntary minicamp back in April, but was a little sloppier, but I think the defense is catching up just a little bit too. But you're seeing a lot of balls being completed, a lot of things happening quickly. And it's just night and day over the last couple of years. And I think I probably said it last time I was on with you. I'm not here to bash Josh Freeman at all. That's water under the bridge. But I'm going to do a comparison to Josh the last 3 years that I saw him covering this team, and McCown and even Glennon some this year, is a command of the offense, something that just was, you know, somewhat lacking. And fans used to make bringing this up on Peter Report's message boards during training camp. You know, Freeman, you know, he was maybe 50-60%, more like 50% most of the time, and just never really looked 100% comfortable. And I tended to make the excuse that, well, the defense knows what plays they're running, and, hey, it's just training camp. And when the real bullets start flying, it'll be different. Well, as we saw last year, it wasn't different. I think fans are going to be pleasantly surprised when they're able to see this offense going against the defense, how much more professional and in control this offense has looked. And again, blame it on Freeman, blame it on Shiano, blame it on Raheem, whatever you want to do. All I'm
any of the four offensive coordinators.
Difference between the two.
Yeah. I don't doubt it. You've got a sort of consummate pro, though depending on whether you're a fan or a detractor, he's either a consummate pro or a hack journeyman in McCown, right? It's amazing how different the perspective can be on the guy. I've always thought athletically he was interesting, but athletic interest doesn't necessarily always equate to wins. And so it's one of those things where you got to get into the right situation in the right system.
Sure.
And then magically things happen a la Rich Gannon, a la Kurt Warner. There's probably a billion other examples that a more adept student of the game could come up with than I can.
Well, but what you're saying is exactly the way I felt. When they signed Josh McCown back during early March when free agency opened, my opinion was, here's a journeyman quarterback who's bounced around the league. What are you doing? Committing potentially up to $10 million over the next 2 years for this guy. But it didn't take me about 5 minutes into his initial press conference to realize, I don't know how he's going to be on the field, but this guy is already a confident leader who has, I don't want to use the word aura about him. It's just something about McCown when you have an opportunity to talk to the guy. And then, okay, then we're like, okay, maybe this is something more to this. And then when you see him out there the first day of that voluntary minicamp, and it looks like a pro day where he's completing 65 out of 70 passes. You know,
right.
I mean, it's just night and day. I think fans. I mean, I don't know that he's going to have the Rich Gannon story, or the Kurt Warner story, or whatever it may be, but he's going to have a better story than Josh Freeman had last year. I'm completely confident of that.
This is something, and I don't want to delve too much into this because I'm always accused of, and I am in fact a Josh Freeman apologist because of the relationship I have with him. So I will recuse myself from being. I will admit that I am as shit. My vocabulary's gone. When I try and be indifferent, there's a word for it that a real person would know.
Impartial.
Impartial. There it is. I try to be as impartial as possible because I look at film and
right.
look at stats. And you know, Glennon was 59% last year for the games that he played in. And Josh's 5-year career is like 57.8. But regardless, the thing that you're bringing up is something that I would expect out of a vet. Now, what I will be excited by is if Mike shows that same development from year one to year two, and Mike's gotten a lot of credit for his work in the film room, his ability to pick up offense, which is great. And in fact, these guys are at the same disadvantage that I would usually, like when you had pointed out that it's training camp, we all had our reasons to try and protect Josh at times, right? One of them was how many different systems there were. But that being said, these guys are doing the same fucking thing. They're coming in here with Tedford. They don't know what this system is.
Exactly.
Right? So it will be very interesting to me because while I do have some concerns about Mike Glennon from his physical aptitude in an offense that seems to be predicated on having a little bit more mobile quarterback, not saying we're running a spread, et cetera, but not. I see Mike as a prototypical pocket passer. I think you let him stand back there and do his thing. But it'll be interesting to see how they're able to develop along these lines. So
you know, and I think Mike has developed. I mean, just – you know, I pay more attention to McCown right now, obviously because he's the starter and he's getting the most first team reps. But talking about Josh, maybe I said Mike, but I also, you know, we do watch Mike. I think Mike is certainly improved over last year. Now that just goes without saying. I mean, you talk about a guy coming from college to the NFL. He's got 13 games of pro experience under his belt right now. He's gonna be better. If he learned absolutely zero, if he doesn't correct the first mechanic, if he doesn't study the first amount of tape, he's gonna be better just because of 13 games of experience.
Right.
But as we know, and you mentioned, Mike Glennon is that classic, prototypical, in my opinion, drop back passer. You better surround him with a good pocket, or he's gonna crumble. His mental aptitude is head and shoulders above a lot of quarterbacks in this league, and certainly guys we've seen wearing the pewter and red and the orange and white through the last 37 or 38 years. He's a very intelligent guy. But as I've said on the show before, too, if intelligence was the case, you know, every NASA scientist that got laid off with the shuttle program would be quarterback in the NFL. So it takes physical talent, too. But I have seen some improvement from Mike Glennon in a lot of the little things, too. One thing we're still noticing with Mike, and I think you probably noticed this during training camp last year, and even during the game somewhat, he tends to not want to take that chance with that ball down the field.
Right.
He tends to hit the check down. Not the worst thing in the world, but at the same time, the difference between a veteran like McCown who has confidence, and you know what? He almost has nothing to lose. Think about it. He's going to be 35 when the season starts. This is his last team, right? He's got a two-year deal. He can make up to $10 million. What does he have to lose? Instead of taking a safe little 5 or 6 yard, you know, out to a running back who fades out in the flat, or trying to hit that seam down the middle, you know what I mean? Josh just takes more chances, but here's the deal: he takes those chances. He's fully confident in his mannerisms, his body, everything about him. When you watch him, his body language, that he's going to complete that pass, and more times than not, he has. And I think it was so huge for him last year to have those 8 games in Chicago and to have the success that he had with the touchdown-to-interception ratio. Now, they were only 5-3 during those 8 games. But you know, if he doesn't play those 8 games, number one, he's not in Tampa. And if he is, he's Mike Glennon's backup, in other words. But he gained an invaluable amount of confidence being able to play in Chicago last year. And it is obvious. It is obvious to everyone who has spent any amount of time watching these OTAs that it's just a different guy under center this year for the Buccaneers, more so than Freeman and Glennon and anybody else we've really seen in the last few years.
It's going to be interesting because the last time we had a quarterback I think that we felt confident in was with Brad Johnson, but we knew what we had, right? We didn't think we had a world beater. We had a game manager, right? And that's become almost a vulgarity when thrown at quarterbacks now. I don't want to be known as a game manager. Listen, just go win some games.
Right.
I don't need you to blow the world up. You don't have to be Tom Brady. I know you want to get $100 million like Colin Kaepernick got, but if you win us a Super Bowl, good shit's going to happen.
Sure.
Right? But what we got is a guy who doesn't have a whole lot of tread on his tires despite his age. He's very athletic and could really do some good things, and it's good that he's shown those things in OTAs. Now, with regards to the rest of the team, is there anyone else that's leaping off of the field, pardon the expression, that we may not be aware of?
Trying to think of some guys that people may not be aware of. I'll tell you, Leslie Frazier pointed out a couple guys yesterday, some backup linebackers and Khalil Glad.
Oh, I know Khalil.
And you know what? We've noticed some things, too, with these guys. You know what I mean? Everybody's assuming, and yes, Casillas will line up September 7th as the starting Sam linebacker for this team. But there's some guys that are going to be pushing him. There's some hungry guys behind him. Another guy that I'm real high on is Patrick Omome, the guard. I'm telling you, in my opinion, there's a 50% chance this guy is lined up as one of the starting guards. Now, I say that, you know, the Buccaneers will cut him tomorrow because he's had crappy practices and he's doing things that I can't see or understand. But, no, in all seriousness, this is a guy I think fans need to pay attention to, a guy that I'm going to do a feature on and next week. I wanted to do that this week, but instead I can only interview so many guys before they get out the field. And I have a story on Euclid Cummings tomorrow, another guy that has impressed me. Backing up Gerald McCoy and playing that three technique. This guy, really cool guy. Had an opportunity to spend about 6 or 7 minutes with him yesterday. Good interview. I'll have that up tomorrow. But he's number 95, undrafted rookie free agent. Joe Cullen was actually at his pro day. He was conducting the drills during the pro day, and they were there to look at somebody else, a potential draftable guy. And Cummings really stood out to Joe and the defensive staff that were there for that pro day. And he's, when you watch the defensive line do their drills, and they do a lot of bag drills and a lot of swatting. There's probably names for this that you guys use in the coaching profession. I've forgotten them. But they'll go through a gauntlet of bag drills. And in times past, and let's just go back and try and picture this in your head, you've got five bags, you know, the tall dummy bags, I call them. You know, they're weighted on the bottom. They're lined up in a row, and the guys run through in and out of them. They're swatting left, they're swatting right, they're ripping up, they're, you know, doing all of their different moves. What this staff is doing is they've got those guys, particularly when they work with defensive tackles, they break them up. By the way, defensive tackles and defensive ends work separately from each other for the most part during their individual period. But particularly with those interior linemen, they've got those bags in there very, very tight together. So they're having to, you know, not trip over the bag. They're having to, you know, watch their footwork. But the explosion you hear, when you hear him slap the bag, you know it's number 95 slapping the bag. And I talked to him a little bit about that yesterday. I'll have some more in the story tomorrow. But he's a guy I think people should pay attention to. This guy could end up being on this roster and be number 2 on the depth chart behind Gerald McCoy. And as we know, you know, that's a pretty thin spot. You know, I mean, I can't even tell you who backed up Warren Sapp back during his heyday. And knock on wood, Gerald McCoy stays healthy the way Warren Sapp was able to for the most part during his career. But we hope number 95 doesn't have 5 sacks this year, because that means McCoy's not on the field very much. But you got to have depth in that position. You want to have depth everywhere. You can't. So you've got to find these undrafted guys with potential and coach them up the way Joe Cullen and Mike Fair, the assistant line coach, are doing. But he's a guy I want people to pay special attention to when they go out to training camp. I think they'll see something unique out of this guy. Whether he picks up the mental aspect of the game, whether he's got some other deficiencies physically that's going to keep him from making the team, I can't say that right now. I know he's got a great attitude. I know he's got a lot of explosion and a lot of anger in those punches, which is to me, exciting when I'm watching defensive line go at it.
Yeah, and from a defensive line perspective to the listeners out there, one of the things that Marinelli was so good about was he understood the focus on hands. When you talk about trench battle, defensive, well, both sides, defensive and offensive, it's about controlling the chest. And the defensive lineman cannot allow the offensive lineman to get their mitts on him. Now, if we end up running zone, which it looks like we're going to with the athleticism that we've assembled in the offensive line, and I don't know, Mark, if you've seen enough to know that we're running primarily zone or not, but one of the things that defensive linemen have got to be trained to do is to not get those hands on them. So you'll see people working what almost looks like a Wing Chun dummy, right, with their hands. So you're ripping hands off. You've got all kinds of club rip moves, like Mark said. Mm-hmm. One of the things that you look for in training camp, if you're astute anyway, is how the trench battle is going, because they're not going to let them go full speed. But at the same time, a defensive lineman will not want to ever get in the habit of allowing an offensive lineman to lock him up.
Because you're done.
You're done. I mean, it's all over but the crime.
If you're Gerald McCoy, you're done. If an average offensive lineman gets you locked up properly with good technique, you're not going to be effective in that play.
The way a defensive lineman is typically told, you have your assignment, so you know what you're supposed to do from a gap responsibility or a penetration or a contained perspective.
Which, by the way, compared to last year, and I'm sure you've noted it and we all kind of know it, much simpler for these guys, going back to the old one-gap type system. Very few stunts are going to be run, which are going to make a lot of people happy. But sorry, didn't mean to interrupt. But
no, that's fine.
But as you were mentioning, gap responsibility, just to let people know if they haven't heard, obviously, and most people who are the Buccaneer fans understand, it is going to be just a single gap responsibility.
And the thing with stunts is they're supposed to be stunts. There's supposed to be a surprise. If you run a stunt every down, it is no longer a stunt. It's your fucking defense.
Yeah, it's your playbook, right?
Yeah, but the point being, a defensive lineman will have 1 to 3 moves in his head because he's got a plan. He knows where he wants to go. He's going to read the play, try and get there. If move one gets stopped, he really only has time to get to move two, and then it's over. Then he's in pursuit. Chase it down. Don't get a loaf. That's it.
Well, let me just stop you right there, too. And you brought up a good point as far as reading what the offensive linemen are doing. They're spending a ton of time. I really like watching defensive line and the offensive line as much as I can. But last week during OTA, I spent the entire hour individual period. And I teased this earlier. The access we're getting under Lovie Smith is night and day over anything we've had before. We're literally allowed to walk the full circumference, if that's the right word, all the way around the field.
Perimeter,
as opposed to just staying on the patio area and observing these practices. And the access is great for us. I mean, we're literally at times, you know, less than 15 feet away from the players and the coaches. And I love listening to Cullen and Fair as they coach these guys up. I can't print a whole lot of what they say.
Sure.
There's a reason Lovie sticks them off in the corner, because Lovie doesn't like profanity. These guys are old school Rod Marinelli types. So, they've got some choice words to say. But what you were saying as far as reading their keys, they spend a ton of time with 3 down linemen and about 5 offensive guys, maybe 4 offensive guys, maybe 3 offensive linemen and then a tight end. And what happens is just picture the 3 linemen down. And sometimes they do 1, sometimes they do pairs, sometimes they do 3s, but let's just say 3 guys. Let's just, for the listeners, picture them down in their stance, and the coach, in a sense, is standing where the linebacker would be, all right? So the offensive linemen are looking at the coach, and we've all seen this, and you've done this in drills in your coaching, but you don't say it out loud. You're giving hand signals to the offensive line, telling you go here, you undercut here. They're even telling them, you know, if it's a chop block or if it's a drive block, is it a reach step? I mean, they're giving these defensive linemen all these different scenarios. And Fair and Cullen will stop in the middle of a drill and make a guy go through it over and over and over. And we've seen that happen to Daquan Bowers, who, to me, tends to be struggling the most picking up the technique part of things. And he's the guy. And I don't know if it's because they're trying to coach him up because they really see that potential there, or if he's screwing up. It's hard to tell. But
right.
The bottom line is he's the guy that probably has to go through the drill more than anybody else sometimes. But the bottom line is what you were saying as far as reading of their keys and stuff. And again, things that the average fan doesn't think about, things that the average writer, myself, I don't think about sometimes. But there's really no stone unturned when you've got Cullen working with these guys. And that's one reason he has the reputation that he does, and he learned it under Rod Marinelli. And if we're going to call Rod Marinelli the best defensive line coach in the NFL, although he's a coordinator now, I think he'd have to really make a strong case for Joe Cullen being number 2. And that's exactly what this football team needs with a defensive line that only managed, and I say only, they had 20 sacks from defensive linemen last year. That's not great. It's not terrible, but it's not great either. But you take away the 9.5 from Joe McCoy, the second best was 5.5 sacks from Adrian Claiborne. They had a lot of guys with 1 or 2 sacks. You know, they need in a Tampa 2, I'm trying to wrap this up into one thing to bring it back together. They need with this Tampa 2 to be able to get pressure from that front 4. They're going to need, in my opinion, 25 to 30 sacks, really, from that defensive line. If they can get Gerald to 10 and they can get Johnson to 10, and then between Clinton McDonald and Will Golston and Adrian Claiborne, if those guys can manage 10 themselves, then you're at that 30 sack mark. And we know Lovie's going to blitz the linebackers more so than Monty Kiffin used to do. He did that a lot in Chicago with Briggs and with Urlacher, and he loves Mason Foster on that blitz. I think we're going to see a lot of Mike blitzes from the defense this year from Frazier. So, again, you get your 30 from the defensive line, and I think this could be a scary defense.
It's going to be interesting to see, Mark. I'm glad to hear that insight, by the way. We had a question from the chat room that I'd like an answer, and I want to go talk about the Mike blitz because, you know, one of the things that gets tossed around about is how much we're going to run Tampa 2, and in a Tampa 2, you're not going to run a Mike blitz out of a Tampa 2. So it's going to be interesting to see how they're able to roll coverage or however they're going to try and disguise that. One of the problems we have had historically, even in the heyday, We didn't blitz a whole lot back in the heyday other than corner blitzes. They were very good. Ronde was exceptional as a blitzer.
Right. You'd see John Lynch creep up and blitz occasionally.
Every once in a while, he'd come in. But linebackers
rarely did you see Barrett Root or Sheldon Corles or Derek Brooks blitz. You're right.
Yeah, but that's not to say there's anything wrong with that, right? As my mom would say, I'm not poo-pooing on it. But it's going to be interesting to see how they implement that and what they do when they decide to call that. One of the problems we've had with blitzing is we do not clearly define our lanes. It goes back to assignments. If you know that you've got a blitz, you've got to try and set up the blitz to a certain extent to give the blitzer an alley, right? Mm-hmm. So you've got to swallow up. And like you said, it's a one-gap system as opposed to a two-gap where the guys are going to get two blockers on.
Right.
You've got to create that alley so the guy – Mason's not a tiny guy. He's got to find the alley and shoot through there, and the timing's got to be perfect. Now – we had a question.
Timing is you just mentioned that. That was something that I saw the last 2 years in particular, even going back to Raheem. The timing of the blitzes were terrible. Mark Barron was not good at it. Linebackers were not good at it. How many times did we see, you're talking about two of the, to me, Breeze and Ryan are two of the best of identifying potential blitzes, checking out of it, and then going over the top with something. We didn't counter. I mean, you know, that 15 seconds from when the offense gets to the line of scrimmage before they snap the ball, there's a chess match going on. And a lot of times, because I just made the Cardinals sin, the Buccaneers tip their hands way too often, too many times. And I know for a fact, personally, I know it frustrated Greg Schiano, but that's something they've got to do a better job of disguising when they're coming on those blitzes.
Well, it's funny because one of the things that I was playing because I moved over to a new laptop, so I didn't have our bumper music. So I played the Eagles call from the game going to the Super Bowl,
mm-hmm.
and they showed the replay. And what Ronde did was play chess. He mm-hmm. showed Donovan a blitz and then checked out of the blitz and then went to the flat, read the play, took it to the house, game over.
Right.
That's like when we talk about that chess match, your players have to be good enough and your scheme has to support things like feinting a blitz and going into, say, press coverage. If you're going to bring your safety down, for God's sakes, he better get his hands on somebody. If he's not coming on a blitz, you better press someone. Otherwise, you're just going to have a great view of a touchdown, and that's not where you want to be.
And another thing that frustrated me in the Schiano regime as far as some of their blitzing is we saw a lot of loop blitzes, if that makes any sense.
Yes.
It's got to be, in my opinion,
straight line.
I'm not trying to say I'm smarter than these, it's got to be point A to point B in the quickest time possible, particularly when you're playing guys like Breeze and you're playing guys like Matt Ryan that gets the ball out of their hands quickly. You don't have time for Mark Barron to start his blitz from 15 yards behind the line of scrimmage and try and loop around the defensive end. It doesn't work that. I mean, it just – now I'll say this. Talking to Greg Schiano personally, I questioned him directly on that, specifically on a couple plays, particularly in that second Carolina game when I saw Barron coming around. And in actuality, sometimes those were disguised blitzes to make him think they were blitzing, but he actually had contained on Cam Newton. So, again – sometimes what we see on TV or sometimes what we see in the stands, without understanding what the scheme is, there's a lot more to it sometimes. But in itself, to me, it was flawed to take Mark Barron completely out of the play, you know what I mean, to be an outside contain guy, you know what I mean? In my opinion, that should be, if you've got three linebackers, your Sam or your defensive end.
Your defensive end,
And
you're describing, classical defensive scheme, right? Your defensive end has edge contain. If your defensive end's coming inside, then use your outside linebacker on that side for contain. You may have your cornerback drop off and stay down there if you expect something to that side. But
you know what? This is a good thing about this cover, too. It's going to allow those cornerbacks to come up because they know they've got help behind them. And that was the problem last year, I think, is these cornerbacks, even when they were in zone coverage, tended to get too much depth and allow things to happen outside. You won't see that in Lovie Smith. They've got a spot. He will make sure, Gilbert will make sure these cornerbacks know their spot. You're not going past that spot because you've got safety help, or depending on if they're fanning out the linebacker or dropping them back. But they'll know their spots, and I think that'll be a big change. Cornerbacks will be able to provide some contain, particularly on guys like Cam Newton, because once they get to their spot, the receiver gets behind them, then they have an opportunity, because Lovie Smith wants his cornerbacks to be strong tacklers, and that's something that Tony Dungy and Monty Kiffin also preached during their time here, is cornerbacks being physical and able to tackle.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Again, for the folks that joined just recently, this is Mark Cook from PewterReport.com, affectionately known here in What the Buckland is the Ginger Badass, giving us some viewpoints from OTAs. We had a question from Skip Brown, and I know you know Skip. He wants to put you on the spot. He says, who is our starting left defensive end?
I would say right now it's Adrian Claiborne. He appears to be getting the most reps there. And, you know, the Herb's palsy thing, people have some concerns about that. And from a physical standpoint, yes, there are some concerns. But I'll say this, of all the people that people have been counting out on this defense, to me, that's the most puzzling. Because Adrian Claiborne was one of my most favorite players to watch. He's not going to be a Simeon Rice picking up 16, 17 sacks, 12 sacks a season. That's just not his. He doesn't have the speed. He's kind of an in-between a bull rush and a speed rush kind of guy. He doesn't stand out either way. But you talk about a guy. Go back and watch the film. In this scheme that was completely complicated, this guy was always moving, and he was always moving towards the ball. And I think that he, you know, there's people saying it's going to be him or Bowers. One of these two guys aren't going to be on this football team.
Right.
Well, if that is the case, then I would put everything I have on it being Adrian Claiborne because of his motor. He has a great motor, and I think you would agree with that. This guy, you know, he was second on the team in tackles for loss. I think he was only two behind Levante David last year. Everybody wants 10, 15 sacks from defensive end, but he was asked to do a lot of different things than just go get the passer. So I'm betting that it's going to be Adrian Claiborne. I think Will Golston has an opportunity. Golston is still so raw, though. They love his athletic ability, his size, his range. I think Golston struggles a little bit with the classroom part of it. Okay, I'm just going to say it. He told me that. He told me off the record, and I'm going to say it on the record now because I don't think he'll mind. It's not that revealing. But he just told me one day, I learn it being on the field.
Right.
I don't learn it just watching it up on the big screen. I need to physically do it. And so they spent a lot of time with him, and I think they've identified that. And it's not that Will Golston isn't smart. Just some people perform better doing it. Other people can grasp it in the classroom. But I think most football players would say, you know, put me out on the field, show me where to go, who to hit, how to do it, while I'm wearing pads as opposed to drawing it up on a chalkboard. I know I would be that way, in other words. I need to perform it. Scott can tell me all the grammar rules all day long, and I'm going to screw it up because I won't remember it when it's time to write stories. But if he's sitting beside me and I say, hey, how is this again? I'm going to write a little bit better, if that makes sense. But bottom line is, I think Adrian Claiborne's your guy. Will Golson's going to push him a little bit. I think Daquan Bowers is the odd man out.
It's interesting. I absolutely agree. I had a chance to meet Will at Adrian's Brachial Plexus charity event that we did a couple weeks ago now. And Will is one of the most engaging and nicest guys I've ever met.
Super, super young man. I don't know if I mentioned this before. I don't have a lot of time to get involved in a lot of things that I wish I could, and that's why I appreciate what you guys do so much in the community. But I do one thing every year for the Youth Alliance, and it's a worldwide organization, but there's a chapter down here, and we do a fundraiser every year, and I asked Will last year to show up, and there was no pay involved, it was just him, and he came out, and it meant everything to these people in Plant City. That's where we had our event out at the Strawberry Festival Fairgrounds in one of the meeting halls there, and we raised a ton of money, but Will was so engaging with everybody. You can go up to Will, and there's no airs about this guy. He's just an average guy who understands how fortunate he is to be able to play football for a living, and I'm just backing up everything you're saying. It's a super, super young man.
If you haven't done your story on him yet, you should, because there's even more behind that. When I spoke to Will, this is a kid who grew up homeless at times, right?
Absolutely.
I mean, he has been through some shit.
Yep.
And come out the other end. So,
yep.
But the reason...
And now wants to help
others
who've been in that situation.
Yeah.
I did a story on him early last year. His goal, I mean, when he's done with football, he wants to be a mentor to youth. He wants to run a youth organization. And that's why I thought about him when we were trying to get players involved in this organization that I am, which is an anti-bullying type situation and you know, helping kids that are down on themselves and raising their self-esteem. Because here's a guy who could have quit on life a long time ago and got caught up on the streets of Detroit, which is, we know, is not a great place to raise kids these days. But he did, and he persevered through it, got his high school degree, qualified, went to Michigan State, and he's just a fine, fine young man, and he's going to make an impact on this community or the Detroit community one day when he's done with football. I know that for a fact.
And probably both. And one of the things that was interesting for me, and I'll go a little bit sideways here on you, Mark. Mm-hmm. At that event, there were a number of people. Akeem Spence was there. Mason Foster was there. The guys were awesome with these kids. And Mason specifically, by the way, I haven't had a chance to socialize with Mason, but he was awesome with the kids. Will was great with the kids. Obviously, Adrian was great with the kids. Mm-hmm. But one of the things you're starting to see is these guys building these bonds. And one of the things we noted as well, and we're obviously close to Adrian just because of the relationship we have, he is in great shape. Now, he knows about the Herb's palsy issue. He knows the things he's got to work on. And it looks like he's done a good job of trying to work through that. What I watched Joe Cullen's interview, and one of the things I love that he talked about was on money down, third down. Mm-hmm. You want your best pass rushers on third down, obviously, yep. if it's down and distance appropriate. And he's like, essentially, I'll paraphrase Joe Cullen, who may in fact have spoken this way if he wasn't on the microphone. He didn't give a shit who it was. He wants his best four dogs hunting on yep. third down.
Whether they're defensive tackle,
he doesn't care what the hell position they play.
Exactly. And we saw Seattle use that formula last year to win a Super Bowl. There were times there were four defensive ends on the field rushing the quarterback last year. There were times when there were three defensive tackles on the field rushing the quarterback. I mean, it was just all based on their personnel scheme and what they were trying to accomplish and what they thought the other team was going to run. But that's exactly it with Cullen. I mean, it doesn't matter what your label is. If you're the best guy, it's third down, and you're the best guy right then, you've got your energy, you're ready to go, and you've got the best technique, and you've worked your ass off in practice, you're going to be on the field on those money downs, absolutely.
The powerful thing for that rotation, and he talked about in the same interviews, you don't want such a drop-off between rotation one and rotation two, that when rotation two is in there, fans and everyone alike are sitting there going, oh, please, for the love of God, let mm-hmm. someone drop a pass and let us get off the field. Right, what you want is these guys... You're not going to get another Gerald McCoy on the same team, typically. But if you can get someone who can hold that up well enough, then you can keep a Gerald McCoy or a Johnson always with air. They've mm-hmm. always got their lungs. You don't have to worry about the fourth quarter because everyone's got all their gas.
Right.
And that's really, really powerful.
But and I will say this. That's one thing that Scott noted to me because Scott Reynolds, my boss at Peter Report, was covering this team going all the way back to 95. But he saw Monty Kiffin come in here. Now, the difference between Marinelli and Kiffin and Cullen is Rod and Monty rarely took those four guys out of there. They weren't big on platooning and wholesale, let's bring four new in and take four off. But that's something that Cullen and I don't know if it's because, you know, it's been, you know, what is it, been 15, you know, going on almost 20 years since Monty got here. You know, maybe the game is a little different. The offensive linemen are a little bigger, a little stronger. Maybe you have to do that a little bit more now. But Monty Kiffin didn't take these guys off the field very often. I mean, when his four down guys started the game, unless they were 100% gas, they stayed in. And I don't ever remember, and Scott said the same thing, he rarely ever remembers if it ever happened, four guys on and four guys off. It just didn't happen very often. I think we'll see a little bit more. Well, I say that. I don't think McCoy's come off the field unless he just can't breathe anymore. But as far as the other guys, I think you're absolutely right. And I think it may have been even Frazier who said it, and it was because I have a story up today on Leslie talking about we want that second unit to be as good as the first unit. He said we're not there yet, but we're working to get there. And here's something to point out again. I don't mean to bash anybody from the previous coaching staff, Randy Melvin or Brian Cox or any of these guys. But I will say this, I feel Joe Cullen and Mike Fair are going to be better coaches for these defensive linemen than we saw with the past regime. Even, you know, I think Keith Millard, I wish he could have stayed. I think he really was making a great impact with a guy like Gerald McCoy. But when they did the wholesale changes with Raheem, he was caught up in that. But I think Cullen is a huge upgrade over Randy Melvin, and I like Randy. He's a nice guy, but I'm just being honest here on the show.
No, and we appreciate that. And because if you weren't honest, then we wouldn't ask you back. So we appreciate the honesty, and I appreciate that when you can't say something, you tell us, and that's fine too, because you were in a position where sometimes you're going to hear some shit that you can't tell us, and that's okay.
Right. My wife tells me, because I tell her, she's like, I hope you're making notes of this so you can write a book because, you know, your retirement plan sucks. So, I don't keep any notes, unfortunately. I should because, like Scott and I said, there's so many things we'll take to our grave that we wish we could report. And if you ever get me hammered enough, I might spill the beans at a bar one night. But the fact is that I don't drink, so that'll probably never happen. You'll have to slip a roofie in my drink one day when I'm at your when I'm over at the man cave at the Derek household.
Well, I love how you say that one day as if it's going to not happen if you come to the man cave. I mean, Jesus, what the hell do you think I have a man cave for? But one question I want to end with, because I've already occupied too much of your time probably tonight. I know you've got very important things to do over at Pewter Report, and I want to hear all of the exciting things you've got going on over at PewterReport.com. Before I pick on you for not coming even for a second to the draft party that you were going to come to, Hardy Nickerson, what kind of an impact has Mr. Hardy made? I saw his interview as well. I think a lot of fans who've been with the team for a long time are very excited about the energy and the sort of look back to the glory days that Hardy brings to the team.
Well, and not just to try and pimp Pewter Report, but listen, Scott's Fab Five last Friday, one of my favorite in the 4 years I've worked here, because Scott was able to get Hardy by himself a couple months ago for about an hour, and this is his second Fab that concentrated on Hardy Nickerson. Scott will admittedly say he was one of his favorite players to cover. Rondé was number one. I think Hardy was number two, but he provided a ton of great insight on Hardy's career. The listeners right now, I'd say at least half of them don't remember seeing. I mean, a lot of them came aboard, you know, as they got older. My son's sitting here saying he doesn't know who Hardy Nickerson is. But Hardy Nickerson, you know, made this franchise relevant again. And everybody points to Sapp and Brooks and Lynch, and yes, that was important. But Hardy Nickerson came in 93 as a free agent and really kind of set the groundwork and the work ethic. You know, whether it was physically kicking Keith McCants' ass in the locker room as he did, which he talks about in Scott's Fab Five last Friday. They can look it up on PewterReport.com. But, you know, I think an instant respect level is one thing that he brings because, you know, again, I think this linebacker group is probably one of the, you know, one of the coolest groups, Levante Mason. You know, I love Jonathan Casillas a lot. Khalil is a cool dude. They're all really, really good guys. Dane Fletcher, the whole nine yards. So I don't think they're going to be like, yeah, right, whatever you say, coach. But if they ever did, the guy can snap on film in 2 seconds. And if they don't know who Hardy Nickerson was when he got hired, I'm sure they know who he is now.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean just because you played in the NFL that you're an effective football coach.
No.
But I'm going to go with Lovie Smith on this. If Lovie Smith feels he's the right man for the job, then I'm going to go with it. And I can't imagine him not doing anything but making Levante David a little bit better. I mean, somebody asked me, maybe it was even Skip last week, asked me, you know, what do you think he's going to do to help Levante? I don't know what there is to do to help Levante. I guess he can relate some of his experiences a little bit. I guess, you know, he can help him understand the concepts of the defense a little bit more. But this guy, I don't know that he needs a whole lot of coaching. But some of these young guys are really going to benefit from having a guy like Hardy Nickerson leading that meeting room every day at One Buck Place.
Well, and you bring up a really good point, Mark, which I guess you're kind of paid to do. So the difference between being a great player and being a great coach is huge. It's fucking huge. And what's funny is fans quite often go, well, I want insert big name here to be the running back coach because he was a running back, or I want big name here to be receiver coach. There is no implied correlation between skills as a coach and skills as a player. That's why you can have a random-ass fat guy who never played be a great coach, or a scrawny guy be a great analyst. There is no tie between those. The difference, however, is guys that played the game can do one thing very clearly better than a guy who hasn't. They can speak firsthand. Hardy can take these linebackers and go, when I played, this is what I did. This is why I did it. You were probably taught X, Y, and Z, and I'm telling you right now, if you want to succeed in this system, you should do A, B, and C. And that is so valuable if they are able to communicate that to the young players that you don't learn it in a book. You don't learn it when you're coming up. That is something you only learn from a vet.
Experience, absolutely.
So it is very, very powerful. Listen, I want to thank you, Mark, for joining us, as always. Of course, I'd rather have you here roofied up and babbling about things, but maybe
and
next time.
Pouring honey all over each other.
Well, listen, no one wants that visual. No one.
Okay. In Speedos.
No one wants that. Listen, I was on a tarpon fishing trip with a buddy named James who was in a Speedo the whole time. He's in good shape. It was disturbing.
Great pictures on Facebook, but thanks for the invite. But go ahead.
You know, I invited you to something a little while back, and you stood me up, so I'm not inviting you anymore.
Well, if it's involving fishing, I will change all of my plans to let everybody know out there.
Yeah, I see. So at any rate, and Spent in the chat room did ask when Hardy came back, is he qualified to coach? And Hardy did coach. Right, mm-hmm. So it wasn't like this is his first job as a coach.
But he did. He coached 1 year with
Lovie in Chicago, and he was coaching in high school in California, right?
Yeah, he took over the high school program in California. He's qualified, and even let's just say for instance, he's the least experienced coach on that defensive staff. If you look at number of years, when you talk about a Gil Bird, a Joe Cullen, and those guys. But the thing is, he's got that support around him. And look, he's got Lovie Smith. If he's got a question as a coach, who better
ask
to go Lovie. Susan, you know, than Lovie.
No doubt, no doubt. Mark, tell folks about PewterReport.com, what exciting things you have going on, and how we are going to get together for some sort of a social gathering since you guys stood us up on the last one.
Well, I just, and again, another reason to read Scott's SR Fab 5 every Friday. We revealed last week that we have a new development website that will be ready for the start of the season, knock on wood. We're not going to rush this thing out, but it's going to be start over from the ground floor up. A lot of the same features that people like on our website now will stay, but it's time to update and join the year 2014, and we're really excited about that. We've spent a lot of time the last few months meeting with different web developers and picking brains of different people and meeting after meeting on what we want to accomplish with our website. But we will have a new Pewter Report website up. And again, you know, if it's not ready September 7th, we're not going to rush it. If it takes till the second week, that's okay too. But just to let the readers know that we've got some nice changes in store with our website that I think is going to make everybody happy, including Scott and I, and just a better website. Other than that, you know, we'll be at minicamp next week, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. We'll have full practice reports each day. And then I'm taking a vacation in June. So I haven't had one since last June, so I'm looking forward to that. So that's the game plan. You know, we'll have content from here on out. Scott and I did something, and he may get mad if I reveal it, so I won't reveal it completely. But Scott and I have two neat features that are going to happen after this minicamp that will kind of extend from the end of minicamp going into training camp. We do our own draft of our favorite all-time Buccaneer players, and we're going to debate that a little bit over the next few weeks. And we've got a couple other neat features that I think people will be interested in following on Pewter Report, and we hope people will check it out. The one thing we want to do is we want to get to 15,000 followers on Twitter. I think we're at 14,800 right now.
Nice.
So if people will help us get up to 15,000, that would be terrific. And as always, when I do the show, I got five T-shirts. We don't have any double X's right now, just to let people know. So if you're XL down to a small and you like a Pewter Report T-shirt, the first five that email me at mark@pewterreport.com, I'll hook them up with a T-shirt. They got to live in the U.S. because we can't afford to spend $74 to ship it to the U.K. or whatever it costs. But anyway, we'll definitely hook people up. But they've... you know, and if they retweet us and things like that, those things help us a bunch too. So we hope to do that. And we're going to have we're finalizing a pre-training camp get together. We'll have an announcement on that coming up very soon. We want people to come out, and we're also going to do a launch party for our website too. That'll be coming up in September, late August or early September. We're finalizing all of that. So we definitely want you involved. It's something that I've talked to Scott about, and we definitely want to pursue further. Is to try and hook up with you to do a monthly Pewter Report / What in the Buck podcast. You do a great job of promoting it and getting it out there, and you understand the technology part of things. And, you know, if we could partner up and do something like that, you know, whether it be Scott on or I on or me in studio with you or Scott on the phone, however you want to do it, you know, we'd like to do an hour-long deal. If we can work that out at some point, definitely try and get that going before the season two if possible.
I am incredibly game for that. I think it would be a terrific augment to what we already do. And I think that the best way to pull that off really is to do it at one of our sponsors and maybe alternate. Do it a live event, and then folks that can join us come up there, have a beer with us or a sweet tea. And when we did the draft party, I kid you about standing up. I know where you were. I know you had to work.
Yeah.
I know Scott had to work. I know Rick had to work. But you missed a really fun atmosphere.
Sure.
And I think it's something we can maintain.
And
having done, and you've done it too. I saw your pictures from Hooters the other night with the Big Fajita.
Me and Rich. Yep.
Yeah. Live events are so much fun when you've got your shit together,
right?
And people are engaged. If you're at a bar and no one gives a shit that you're there, not
right.
so much on the fun side, because they're all going,
right.
"Who are these assholes in the corner talking? And why won't they turn that down?" But when you've got people there who are actually engaged and enjoying it, and like we had a separate mic. And what's funny is that was, you know, this is something we should talk more about off air, but I love our fans, these tight folks that are in here, the guys we know, the guys who participate on your boards, the regulars, those guys. We need those guys to feel more confident and comfortable stepping up to the mic, engaging in the dialogue. You know, come out from behind the keyboard, people.
And we don't all have to agree, and I have no problem at all, people that disagree with my stories on there. And I got no problem with criticism. As long as it's constructive, I'm all for it. And you know what? I've had people change my opinion to a degree. You know, we're all kind of set in our ways. We've got our views on things. But you know what? When you spend 10 or 15 minutes going back and forth with somebody, messaging them or on our message boards or reading, you know, chat logs when we do our Friday chat,
right.
You know, it makes you think, well, you know what? Maybe I should look at things a little bit different. Maybe this guy's got a point. And I truthfully use our message boards for story ideas sometimes. When there's a topic that people are debating back and forth, you know, we're not God, you know, and I don't think anybody believes that anyway, but if they did, they're wrong. I mean, we are fortunate to do a job covering a football team, but it doesn't mean I know anything more about football than the guy that is typing on his keyboard. And I don't think Scott and I have ever put on those airs that we try and act like we know anymore, and I know you don't either.
No, I do. I do. You guys are better than I am about that.
No. Well, yeah, you sometimes do, but you can do that. But bottom line is you know, engaging, going back and forth, and that's why people, you know, I encourage people. People say message boards are so 1995, you know, but in actuality, when you're talking about a specific sport message board, and just to translate it to college football, Rivals with their War Chant, their Orange Blood, and all these different networks they have. I mean, these are highly viewed parts of the dialogue between football fans that can bring people a world away. I mean, you got Kurt McDonald in Australia, you know, you've got Gurr in England, and we've got, you know, you've got listeners all over the world too. And
yep.
You know, we all can't go sit around the neighborhood bar and have a beer and talk about it, but we can we can debate and have dialogue through message boards and through these podcasts and things that you do here. So I think we need to get together and make this happen, because I think it can be a mutual benefit for both of us.
Well, I'm in, man. I'm in. So let's get that going. Mark, read Mark's content on pewterreport.com. If you want to get a shirt and you're not too fat, send him a note at mark@pewterreport.com. It is Mark at pewterreport.com.
It's motivation to lose weight. I mean, you know, the shirts are so freaking awesome that when you get it, if you're 260 and you need to be about 190, you'll lose those 70 pounds in about a week because you want to wear this shirt. That's how awesome they are.
And if you don't lose the 70 pounds, you can just wear it and stretch that shit out a little bit and look really sexy.
Well, I mean, you know, I tend to wear undersized shirts under my regular clothes because it kind of holds the fat in. It's my own version of
compression
clothing, you know.
that's the Mark compression gear.
Yes.
Nice. Well, thanks for joining us, Mark. As always, informative. We will talk to you between now and then and figure out when we can get together and see what the future holds.
Sounds good, buddy. Appreciate it, man.
Take care, Mark. Mark Cook from pewterreport.com. And, boy, that was a loud-ass fucking noise on that hang-up. I'll fix that on the Skype stuff. So any of you guys in the chat room, mark@pewterreport.com, hit him up, and the first five of you will get that free T-shirt. Hopefully you guys have enjoyed the show tonight. I always enjoy having Mark in here. We'll get him back in the studio. I'll roofie him up, and it'll be like when we had the British guys over here covering the Man U debacle. I'll get this recording etched out and put up on the website. Hopefully we won't have any problem with the website this evening. We're still migrating over to our new server. But between now and then, we'll see if Patches can put together some more content. I know he's getting out there getting ready to work. I want to thank Patches for the content he's already provided and look forward to the future content. If you guys know Brian Dory, please do write him and say, listen, Brian, I know you're upset about the draft picks. I know you're butthurt. I know you're very emotional. But please, for the love of all that is good and holy, stop living your life and write some more content because you're very good. So Kurt's dropping the podcast link in there as well. That's great. I want to thank everyone out there for all of the things you do. I see New Jersey Bucks fan. I still do not have the shirt of you winning Nationals in a What the Buck shirt, my friend. So I would love to see that. One last pimp for Bucks Brief. If you've not checked out Bucks Brief's podcast, go do that. Does a great job over there. It's nice to see more people doing that work. There was a time not too long ago that there weren't many of us out here, and it's great to see some folks popping up and doing a great job. Shout out to the chat room. I know that we do normally do that early, but Kurt, New Jersey Bucks fan, Buck for Life, Adam, Buckhead, Spent, Bucks Brief, B Shuck, Patches, Buck Boy, JJ Dakota. I probably massacred that. I'm sorry. Daniel, Jackie, Palmer Lou, Skip Brown, Buck You Up, Shadow Hawk, Irregardless 55, Bucks Ton, and one viewer whose name we do not know. Gene and Jace's Pod Bash. Got it. Got it. Oh, Jace, you were the one who tweeted me. All right, thank you very much. And for those of you who are on Twitter, please do feel free to spread the word. Why did I just turn into Kermit the Frog? Feel free to spread the word about what we do. We, at one time, actually were the leading Twitter group for the Bucks before anyone discovered new technology. And now Pewter Report has blown the fucking doors off of us. They're approaching 15,000. I think we're approaching 4,000. So we would most certainly love to get that number up as well. So for the entire staff here, you'll have an audio-less exit. I will, however, transition over to everyone's favorite image. This is our lovely and talented Jackie holding our crown royal. You guys should definitely know what that is, and if you don't, you need to get over to our sponsor bar, Wing House, on Hillsborough, and ask for Jackie. She is absolutely gorgeous, and she will not hold crown like that for you, only for us. So, for the whole crew, I am old school, and I am out of here.